Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. This week's program is the third in a series on the immigration crisis. In the first program, I discussed all the damage being done to these migrant families by bringing them into the United States. The whole narrative of the left is that this is charity, this is diversity, equity, inclusion. But in reality, they're not helping these people, they're hurting these people by luring them in with the deceitfulness of riches. In the second program, I again emphasize that point, and that those pushing for open borders are doing so because they're steeped in DEI and CRT ideology. They believe immigration law is wrong because of their belief in globalism and social economic equity. Since they believe America was founded by killing Indians and using slaves, who are we to tell other people that they can't come in? And in this very insightful editorial in the New York Post, entitled How the Gospel of Open Borders Took Over the Democrat Party, we read that for the Democrats, open borders advances equality, civil rights, racial justice, and equal opportunity. This serves people of color and others who have been historically underserved, marginalized, and adversely affected by poverty and inequality. And our head of Homeland Security, Mayorkas, has said just that. He is an activist for open borders. He ignores the law. And he has been secretly opening pathways for these immigrants to flood into the United States. And in the second program, I explained how Biden and the administration is lying about the open border policy because they know it's unpopular with most Americans, but they believe they know better. And this is what Americans need to do to be virtuous. So you can check out those first two programs, program 292 and 293. An overall lesson we're learning in this open border crisis is this timeless principle that I've mentioned so often, that every leftist policy that purports to help people in the end only brings pain and suffering. From transgenderism to LGBTQ to abortion to open borders to feminism to climate change to big socialism, big state socialism. In the end, what is purported to be charity and virtue and human rights produces pain and loss. Not just because these policies are coming from the left, but because these policies are based on an erroneous worldview and they violate biblical moral law. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 29. Because they hated knowledge and they did not choose the fear of the Lord, they would not accept my counsel. They spurned all my reproof. So they shall eat the fruit of their own ways and be satiated with their own devices. For the waywardness of the naive will kill them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. But he who listens to me will live securely and will be at ease from the dread of evil. So if you want to destroy your life, if you want to destroy your family, if you want to destroy your country, simply violate the moral imperatives found in God's word. The basic principles of the Mosaic law still apply. Deuteronomy 28:15, but it shall come about, if you do not obey the Lord your God, to observe to do all of his commandments and his statutes, with which I charge you today, that all these curses will come upon you and overtake you. And one of those curses listed in Deuteronomy chapter 28 is that the foreigner who is among you shall rise above you higher and higher, but you will go down lower and lower. Deuteronomy 28:43. An invasion of foreigners into a country, mass immigration, mass migration, can be the judgment of God upon a people. God's great replacement. It may mean people are losing their God-given land rights because of national sin. Now, isn't it interesting that the United Nations is saying the opposite? That migration is exclusively a force for good. You know, this week's program is going to be a theological explanation for what is happening with these open borders? What does the Bible have to say about it? My radio program is aired on both Christian stations and on a secular station. WNYN, AM 970, New York City, conservative talk. Now, those listening on AM 970 are probably surprised to hear references to biblical theology and biblical texts, because most political pundits, even conservative political pundits, never venture very far into the theological reasons for events and policies. But in my program, I point to the elephant in the room, the elephant that most pundits don't want to talk about, the truth of God. Now, if you happen to be a non-religious person, or you're of a different religion than Christianity, at least you should be aware that evangelicals think in terms of open borders and this invasion of immigrants as God's judgment upon our nation. Every serious evangelical, when they see on the news these caravans of thousands of immigrants crossing the border unimpeded, immediately think of the Deuteronomy 28 curse. It shall come about, if you will not obey the Lord your God to observe to do all of his commandments and his statutes, the foreigner who is among you shall rise above you higher and higher, but you shall go down lower and lower. And additionally, the judgment that would come upon the nation of Israel, if she turned back to paganism, was that she would be removed from the land and taken back to Egypt and be replaced with another people. It will come about, if you do not obey the Lord your God, Deuteronomy 28:68, the Lord will bring you back to Egypt in ships, by the way about which I spoke to you, Hosea chapter 8, verse 13. Now he will remember their iniquity and punish them for their sins. They will return to Egypt. Hosea chapter 9, verse 3. They will not remain in the Lord's land, but Ephraim will return to Egypt. Their land, their nation, was a gift from God. But if they forsook God, God would take away their land rights, because it is God who determines the appointed times and the boundaries of the people. Acts chapter 17. Now, of course, critics and unbelievers will say this is nonsense. It is merely a matter of geopolitical, environmental, circumstantial factors, the morality of a nation, the religion of a nation, has nothing to do with the nation's continuance. But no Christians believe there is a God who judges and there is a God who blesses. Psalm chapter 9, verse 17, the wicked will be returned to Sheol, the grave, even all nations who forget God. And Psalm 33, 12, blesses the nation whose God is the Lord. There's not merely the nation using the name of Yahweh, but a nation that holds to his truth and values. If a people lose their belief in God and his moral law, they're finished. Now, this may surprise many listeners that evangelicals see open borders as God's judgment, because we often hear verses quoted in support of open borders, mostly by the religious left. Verses such as Deuteronomy chapter 10 and verse 19. So show your love for the alien, for you are aliens in the land of Egypt. Or Leviticus chapter 19, verse 34. The strangers who reside with you shall be with you as a native among you, and you shall love him as yourself, for you are aliens in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. And Matthew chapter 25, verse 35. I was a stranger and you invited me in. But evangelicals are not stupid. They know the difference between love toward an individual and the great replacement, an ideology to flood America with immigrants, either to get new voters or to make America less white or to push for globalism or to break America financially. If you don't realize that there are enemies of America pushing to flood America with immigrants, you have your head in the sand. You just don't understand how evil works. So yes, there are scriptural texts about loving the stranger, and this we do, but evangelicals also understand that an invasion can be God's judgment. And this is Sunday School 101. So let's talk a little bit about this theology. When God sent the Israelites to occupy the land of Canaan, which became Israel, which is now called Palestine, God removed the Canaanites from their land because of their sinful culture. Noah's son Ham had four sons: Cush, Mizraim, Put, and Canaan. Canaan's descendants occupied the area that became what is called the land of Canaan. That's obvious. God placed a curse on Ham's son, Canaan. Genesis chapter 9, verse 23. Cursed be Canaan, a servant of servant he shall be to his brothers. And the reason for the curse was probably that out of Ham's four sons, Canaan displayed his father's immoral tendencies. And we know that from the line of Canaan came forth the immoral cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. So let's not underestimate how founders or how the founding ideologies or beliefs of a country can affect the posterity for generations. So the Jewish people were told that once the iniquity of the Amorites became complete or fulfilled, God would judge the Amorites and give the Jews their land. Genesis chapter 15. As for you, you shall go to your fathers in peace. You'll be buried at a good old age. Then in the fourth generation, they will return here, for the iniquity of the Amorite is not yet complete. According to Genesis chapter 10, verse 16, Canaan was also the father of the Amorites. And the Amorites became the largest Canaanite tribe. So this was synecdoche, using a part to represent the whole. Just like northern Israel was often called Ephraim, because Ephraim was the largest tribe. So when the Jews were conquering the land of Canaan, God warned the Jews, Leviticus 20, "You are therefore to keep all my statutes and my ordinances to do them, so that the land to which I'm bringing you to live will not spew you out. Moreover, you shall not follow the customs of the nations, which I will drive out before you, for they did these things, and therefore I have abhorred them." The reference to the land spitting you out is a metaphor for losing one's land rights because of national iniquity. Leviticus chapter 18, verse 25, "For the land has become defiled, therefore I have brought its punishment upon it. So the land has spewed out its inhabitants. But as for you, you shall keep my statutes and my judgments and shall not do any of these abominations which were done by the Canaanites." But what happened to ancient Israel? Well, after they settled the land, they were blessed, they were established, then they forsook God and went after idols and paganism and the ensuing practices. And the biblical prophets pronounced a coming judgment upon national Israel that because of their sin, like the Canaanites, they would lose their God-given land right. And here's the real kicker. Not only did the Israelites fall into sin, but they fell into worse sins than the Canaanites before them. 2 Chronicles 33:19, "Thus Manasseh, King Manasseh, misled Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem to do more evil than the nations whom the Lord destroyed before the sons of Israel." And Ezekiel chapter 16, "Yet you have not merely walked in their ways and done according to their abominations, but as if that were too little, you acted more corruptly in your conduct than they. As I live, declares the Lord, Sodom, your sister, and her daughters have not done as you and your daughters have done." So the sins of Israel became worse than the sins committed by the Sodomites. And here we're reminded of that old trope, if God doesn't judge America, he's going to have to apologize to Sodom and Gomorrah. And given this text, we think of the pagan Indian tribes that occupied America before the Europeans came here for religious freedom. The indigenous tribes were engaged in constant warfare, immorality, the worship of demons. But look at America now, rejecting gender and teaching that little boys can be little girls. The Indian tribes didn't teach this. They had some respect for the laws of nature and nature's God. The Indian tribes didn't have drag queen shows and LGBTQ parades and homosexual marriage. They didn't get high on drugs the way Americans are now behaving. And especially the modern practice of abortion. The pagan Indians didn't kill their children in such numbers. The Israelites spilled more innocent blood than the Canaanites who were before them. 2 Kings 24:4. And Americans have spilled more innocent blood than the Indians who came before them. In Ezekiel 16, the text about Israel committing more sins than the Canaanites, God says to Israel, "You slaughtered my children." Ezekiel 16:40, "They, your lovers, these foreign nations, will therefore incite a crowd against you, and they will stone you and cut you to pieces with their swords. They will burn your houses with fire and execute judgment upon you." In Jeremiah chapter 16, verse 12, "You too have done evil, even more than your forefathers. For behold, you are each one walking according to the stubbornness of his own evil heart without listening to me. So I will hurl you out of this land into a land which you have not known, neither you nor your fathers, and there you will serve other gods day and night, for I will grant you no favor." So this might explain why France and England and many European countries are now being taken over by Arab Islamic immigrants. London is becoming a Muslim city. The Europeans have slaughtered their own children. But abortion is illegal in Saudi Arabia, in all Arab countries. The fertility rate in Saudi Arabia in 1990 was 6 children per woman. In the UK, it was 1.7. In 1990, the fertility rate in Mexico, where abortion was also illegal, was 3.6. But in the United States, it was 1.9, below the replacement rate. Now, if you want to look at this migrant crisis from a purely sociological point of view, it is the result of abortion. Back in 1987, when I was in the Rutgers MBA program, I was taking a class in international business. And I remember the professor commenting on the demographics of Mexico, that the vast majority of the population was under 12 years of age. And he said that given America's low fertility rate and Mexico's high fertility rate, expect Mexico to begin to occupy the United States. So just from a demographic social understanding, he was prophetic. If Americans were having the children we should have, Genesis chapter 3, be fruitful and multiply, there would be no current explosion of illegal immigration because the social conditions in America wouldn't allow for it. But once a population loses its children because it no longer values its posterity, and once it loses its belief in its own existence and future, the people will be replaced with another people. In America, from the 1800s to the 1900s, the fertility rate was 7 children per woman. That was the average. So there are plenty of families that had 10 to 12 children and less fortunate families that only had 2 or 3 children. That's amazing. Now, secular humanists teach that having children in any numbers is a bad thing because their ideology is a culture of death. But Christians believe in the blessing of children. We produce children for the glory of God, souls that can glorify God for all eternity. We understand our future reward. But humanists, secularists, disregard their future and their future posterity. And there is certainly an unseen satanic inspiration behind this. Psalm 127, "Behold, children are a gift of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. How blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. They will not be ashamed when they speak with their enemies in the gate." Now, given all of the scriptures I have just shared with you about God-given land rights and how they are lost through national immorality and the importance of perpetuating a godly line by having children, we can see how cultures that are steeped in the Bible think so different from cultures steeped in paganism. Americans in the 1800s were taught to read using the Bible. Our entire worldview and our values were shaped by biblical injunctions and biblical stories. But today, the populace is biblically illiterate, so they think totally different about everything. They're indoctrinated with humanist ideology of population control and abortion and living for self and godlessness. They don't even know what they don't know. And those few Christians who are in America today who remain steeped in the Bible, they're considered dangerous radicals. They seem like they're from another planet. Because actually, they are from another planet. We're from the kingdom of God. As Jesus said, they are not of this world, even as I'm not of this world. But back to the subject. Christians who understand the scripture understand that the immigration crisis is God's judgment. But the irony is that the secular left actually believe the opposite. They actually believe their own judgment is a virtue, that this is creating fairness and equity, that this is what we need to do in America to bring about a better future. They don't even realize that they're selling the store. Because they've abandoned biblical values that used to be part of our culture, they don't even believe in the nation anymore. They hate MAGA, Make America Great. Our nation is populated with hardcore radical ideologues who want mass immigration into America to destroy the indigenous European families. Here's some news. A piece from Harvard Magazine entitled "Abolish the White Race." Quote, "Make no mistake about it, we intend to keep bashing the dead white males and the living ones and the females too until the social construct known as the white race is destroyed. Not deconstructed, but destroyed." Unquote. Here's a Rutgers professor who recently said we have to get rid of white people. But this is nothing new. We hear about this constantly in public education. Every week we're hearing about some university professor or some public school teacher promoting replacement ideology. Are students being indoctrinated in this? Well, remember this video?
I'm going to prove to you why white people are the reason I'm fat today. If white people didn't go looking for spices, then various sea routes to Indian subcontinent and Africa and other places of the world would not get discovered. And if they didn't get discovered, then East India Company would never come to Indian subcontinent. And if they didn't come, then the fertility of the land would not get destroyed because they forced us to cultivate tobacco and dyes and opioid, things like that, and that destroyed the fertility of my country. And then if that didn't happen, and if they didn't exploit and extract resources until my ancestors were left with nothing to eat, we wouldn't move to this grain-heavy, very little nutritious diet that we have today. Also, if white people didn't come to the Indian subcontinent, then my ancestors would not go through 50 small, medium, large famines in a period of 200 years. That's a lot. And in 1943, nearly 3 million people would not have died due to starvation and malnutrition. And if that didn't happen, then this entire place and the people of this place would not adapt to survive on lower calories. We also wouldn't biologically be programmed to hold on to more fat, because my genes, they always think, okay, you're gonna die. At some point, there's gonna be a famine, you will not have food, and you're gonna die. I would also not be prone to diabetes, high blood pressure, heart diseases, and all that other things. So yeah, white people is the reason why I can't lose weight.
Obviously, this young lady is very troubled. But where is she getting this from? She's not getting this on her own. This is what is being taught in public schools, social studies. The American intelligentsia went from teaching that America was founded on great principles, that it's a city, a light set on the hill, to America is bad. And that change, that self-hate, that self-destructive ideology is part of the judgment of God. God gives men over to deluding influences so that they would walk into judgment. Here's another story. The Pentagon has a diversity chief, Kalisa Wing, who posted all sorts of invective statements against white people. Here's an article that came out yesterday. Mandatory IRS diversity training includes material from a trans academic who calls for death of whiteness, the dogmas of the far left transgender academia has made their way into official IRS training materials for criminal investigators. Here's another article. President Biden calls white supremacists the most dangerous terrorist threat. Now, if he were talking about real white supremacists, that would be one thing. But the term white supremacist is being used as a pejorative against those who hold to Western values, those who actually believe in nationalism. Those values are now being labeled white values, and those values are being considered dangerous and evil. If you get a chance, Google the Great Replacement Theory. It's a term that originated in Europe by activists who are opposed to the influx of Islam into Europe. But if you Google it, as you'd expect, Google prioritizes all the articles that claim it's a white supremacy conspiracy theory. That any talk of national identity is racist. Now, there are many false versions of the Great Replacement Theory, the Nazi version, the anti-Semitic version. But there is a great replacement ideology that's very real and is being taught in critical race theory and wokeism. And what the left wants to replace in America is not primarily racial. It's about getting rid of people in America who have certain Christian Western values. But the left doesn't realize they're replacing themselves. Here's an article from the Washington Post. Nearly half of all Republicans surveyed believe in the Great Replacement Theory. I wonder why. Because that's what the left is teaching. That's what they're pushing. It's not a crackpot conspiracy theory. It's what the left is saying should happen. Now, with a few minutes I have left, I want to discuss how America is doing this to herself. We aren't being invaded by a foreign army. We're falling from within. We're voluntarily giving up our land. And in studying the biblical record of ancient Israel's demise, the Israelites did the same thing. They voluntarily gave up their nation. The land wasn't taken from them as much as the pagan ideology that the Jews adopted caused them to give up and despise their own country. The unbelievers in ancient Israel didn't think Israel had any special right to exist. They might as well be part of the Assyrian Empire or the Babylonian Empire. After all, we worship the same idols and we have the same worldview. Does that sound familiar? Like anti-Zionist Jews today and anti-American Americans? Now, of course, the Jewish people lost their land by the invasion of the Assyrians and the invasion of the Babylonians. But there are many other texts that point out that the Jews themselves sold their country out to foreigners. Three quick examples. First, Solomon married hundreds of foreign wives for the purpose of making alliances with surrounding nations. That's just the way it was done back then. But for each of these foreign wives, he built temples for them outside of Jerusalem so that Israel would become a cosmopolitan city. That there would be temples for all the international traders who were coming along the main passage through Israel, the King's Highway. Solomon's plan was to turn Jerusalem into an international, worldly, multicultural, multi-religious, the accepting of all city. And Jerusalem lost its God-given purpose. In the days of Jeremiah, after the Babylonians invaded Israel, all the remaining Jews in the land voluntarily packed up their bags and went to Egypt. The prophet Jeremiah warned them not to leave Israel and go to Egypt, but the Jews at this time believed that Egypt would be the safest place for them. Thus, on their own accord, they fulfilled the prophecy that in their disobedience, they would be returned to Egypt. Now, if you read the text in Jeremiah 43, what's really interesting is the people are convinced that it was God's will for them to abandon Israel and return to Egypt, thinking that this was God's blessing, when really this was God's judgment. It's really amazing how people can walk right into the pit thinking that they're doing righteousness, that this is virtue, that this is blessing, when they're actually destroying themselves. In the days of Nehemiah, when the Jews returned from exile, the Jews themselves married foreign women and gave foreigners housing in the temple because they simply believed that this is the way to peace, to be ecumenical, and to be open. So in Scripture, we see that God didn't have to force a foreign occupation of Israel. The Israelites did this to themselves because they no longer believed in their own nation, in their own God. It was by their own ideology that they sold out the nation to foreigners. And the punishment was built into their philosophy. Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 19. Your own wickedness will correct you, and your apostasies will reprove you. God doesn't have to send down lightning bolts. People will do it to themselves. So isn't it amazing that the ungodly families in America not only despise bearing children, they're giving away their land to foreigners. So, to answer some final questions, what about the godly families here in America? Are we going to have to pay the price for the sins of ungodly leadership, the ungodly majority? Well, we have the promise that while the wicked will be cut off, the righteous will inherit the land. Psalm 37:9. For evildoers will be cut off, but those who wait for the Lord, they will inherit the land. Psalm 37:11. But the humble will inherit the land and will delight themselves in abundant prosperity. Verse 22. For those blessed by him will inherit the land, but those cursed by him will be cut off. Verse 29. The righteous will inherit the land and will dwell in it forever. And Psalm 37:34. Wait for the Lord, keep his way, and he will exalt you to inherit the land. When the wicked are cut off, you will see it. Now, ultimately, our land inheritance is heaven itself. But there are earthly manifestations of this. Practically, ungodly families in America are being replaced. They're dying. They're childless. Have you noticed that Biden himself, in his aged feebleness and confusion, is the personification of the left? Godly families in America will continue. the racial makeup of America is not our primary concern. What is our concern is the spiritual makeup of America. And since many of the indigenous European families have hardened their hearts, well, then the gospel and the blessing of the land can go to another group of people who are more humble. My church is an international church. And we get along just fine. The mission field is coming to us rather than us having to go to the mission field, all the better. Are you aware of how Franklin Graham is addressing the border crisis? He is conducting evangelistic rallies in border towns. He is calling it the Frontera Tour. If God allows unprincipled magistrates to open the borders, then we respond by preaching the gospel to these people. But notice this from the Ministry Watch website, quote, a liberal faith-based organization has launched a petition against Reverend Franklin Graham's Southern Border Tour, calling on venue organizers to withdraw their invitations. The petition, drafted by Faithful America, has so far garnered nearly 21,000 signatures. The social justice nonprofit has gone after Graham with several previous petitions, mostly condemning Graham for his views on LGBTQ issues and calling out his support for President Donald Trump. This time, Faithful America is denouncing what it says are Graham's anti-immigrant views. So notice that these people don't want the gospel preached to these immigrants. So this is all good for us. Romans 8:28 still holds true. Even when evil magistrates create policies with evil intent, all things work together for good to those who know God, to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. But let's not make the mistake of saying, well, if this all works out for our good and for the good of evangelism, we should therefore support open borders. No. The exile of the Jews off the land was for the good and the sanctification of the true believers in Israel, but that didn't mean that the faithful Israelite at that time should support the Babylonian invasion, to vote for the Babylonians, to send them money, to aid and abet the enemy. Joseph became the ruler of Egypt because his brothers sold him into slavery, but it would have been evil to help his brothers do so. God used the Roman tax to get Joseph and Mary to Bethlehem, but that doesn't mean we should support the tax. Don't mistake the providence of God in turning evil into our good with the will of God for the individual Christian. Remember Jesus' words in Matthew 18:6. Woe to the world because of stumbling blocks, offenses, sins. For it's inevitable that stumbling blocks come, but woe to the man through whom the stumbling blocks come. So Jesus said it's inevitable, it's necessary that these offenses, these sins come about. But you don't want to be the one causing the offense, the sin. You don't want to be the one enticing these immigrants to come to the United States with the promise of the American dream and prosperity. You don't want to be responsible for all of the pain and the loss they're going to experience in getting here. As Jesus also said in the text in Matthew 18:6, but whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble or be offended, it would be better for him to have a heavy millstone hung around his neck and be drowned in the depths of the sea. And as Paul wrote in his letter to the Romans, don't make the error of concluding that if God can bring good out of evil, then we need to support evil. Romans chapter 3, verse 8. And why not say, as we are slanderously reported, as some claim that we say, let us do evil that good may come, their condemnation is just. Well, that should just about do it for this program. I'm losing my voice this week anyway. Thanks for listening. Keep in the word. Stand firm in the truth. And may Jesus Christ reign.